Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
This podcast is sponsored by Cloud Optimizer.
As a business owner or IT manager, are your cloud investment costs going up and you don't know why? It's time for Cloud Optimizer. As you migrate your business to the cloud, what you're spending and why you're spending it can get a little hazy. But Cloud Optimizer clears up the mystery and puts the cloud to work for you. Cloud Optimizer starts by analyzing usage patterns, right-sizing resources, leveraging discounts you may not be aware of, implementing automation, and much more. And by reducing unnecessary expenses and maximizing performance, Cloud Optimizer guarantees you a savings of 5 times what you spend for their service. As you utilize cloud-based services more and more, you don't have to lose sight or control of your spend. You can stay agile, streamline your costs, and optimize your performance, plus save significant money with Cloud Optimizer.
Make the cloud work for you with Cloud Optimizer. Get a free assessment and find out how much you can save by going to cloudoptimizer.com. Go to cloudoptimizer.com for your free assessment. That's cloudoptimizer.com.
Hey there, Duke fans. Welcome to DBR Bites, episode number 47. This is truly an episode of Bites because we got like a bunch of things that we've been talking about like in little doses, little bite-sized pieces of some interesting little stories. Some of those bites will be larger than others. Some of them will be smaller. I'm Jason Evans, here for your listening pleasure. By the way, I want to apologize right up front. My regular microphone isn't working properly, so I'm on a slightly different mic. You may go, why does Jason sound a little bit funny? Not as good, not as professional as he usually sounds. Technology has failed me today. So, but I'm dealing with it. I'm here with Donald Wine. Donald, how is your technology holding up on this fine day?
I'm not going to jinx it. It sounds the way it sounds. And you guys be the judge. DBRpodcast@gmail.com. If you want to comment on our technology, I'm not going to jinx it. It sounds okay right now, I guess. If you can hear me, I'm good to go.
There you go. By the way, speaking of dbrpodcast@gmail.com, our email inbox, we got an email a couple of days ago. I just wanted to read this one at the top. Ken Goodson, Ken just cracked me up. He said, hey guys, can you please just make a bunch of stuff up? You know, just invent stuff out of thin air. I miss you way too much, much more than is healthy for a person of my age. I'm waiting. Go Duke. So Ken, we're here to report all kinds of fake news for you.
Wait no longer. Well, none of this is fake. We don't like to make up stuff, but at least we waited just a little bit just so we can get all these little nuggets, and now we can talk about them.
Exactly. But I just thought that was hysterical. Makeups. No, we're not making anything up. All this is real, but we are going to start with the portal and the prospects that Duke is looking at in the portal. And I do need to say right off the bat, we don't have anything official. We don't even have like strong inclinations of what's going on with Duke. Other than, I'll start by saying this, I think that Duke is looking at a fairly significant piece on the perimeter to be a guard, you know, probably a combo kind of guard to back up Caleb Foster and Tyrese Proctor, or almost to be like alongside those two guys. Frankly, some of the names that are being tossed around are guys who would not obviously play behind Caleb Foster and Tyrese Proctor. I think probably that's the way the roles would sort of be defined, at least initially. But Duke is apparently looking at some pretty big time prospects. And to me, Donald, that's almost more significant than the names themselves. The fact that John Shire is apparently still seeking one very significant player on the perimeter, I think is quite meaningful. Just really quick, the names that I've heard tossed around, probably most prominently, Wuga Poplar, who, you know, frankly, if you did not watch Duke play Miami the past couple of years, you know, I shouldn't need to tell you who Wuga Poplar is, an outstanding perimeter player for the Miami Hurricanes who entered the portal. And Kaderi Richmond, who's coming over from Seton Hall, or, you know, maybe coming over, looking for a new school from Seton Hall. Kaderi Richmond, one of the better players in the Big East, a big-time prospect who has said that Duke is one of the schools that has reached out to him. And then there's one other name that I heard in the past 24 hours or so that I think is sort of interesting, Braden Smith from Colgate. You may think, Colgate? I mean, come on, Patriot League? Well, Braden Smith was the player of the year in the Patriot League this past year, primarily a point guard from Colgate. So the mere fact that you're looking at guys as prominent at Power Five programs as Wuga Poplar and Kaderi Richmond, and a guy who was a Patriot League, a conference player of the year. Again, Donald, that just says to me that Duke's looking at some fairly significant players here to potentially fill out, I think, one more spot in the roster, fill out the roster with one more perimeter player.
Yeah, and you didn't mention Kobe Bray. I know that was someone that we had talked about on a previous show. It had been rumored that he was coming to Duke for an official visit after he went to UConn. He went to UConn. For reasons that we won't get into because the internet is wild, there's a lot of reports about what Kobe Bray was maybe asking for, or what Duke was willing to offer him other than the opportunity to compete, as we've mentioned. But Kobe Bray canceled his visit to Duke. He went to UConn, and then UConn also backed away from there. So not sure where he ends up. I know Kentucky was looking at him, but Kobe Bray was a guy that we were looking at. One of the best, I think the best three-point shooter in the country last year that was in the portal, and will be going somewhere else. But I think when you look at some of these guys that we are going after, it's not necessarily that we're going after a key perimeter guard that can come in and start over Caleb Foster or Tyrese Proctor, but someone who has that potential and that capability. Because as we've mentioned, both of those guys had some injuries this past year. And I think Duke wants to be in a position where, yes, those two are our guys, but if for some reason one of them cannot go in a game, if there's a minor knock that takes them out, and we hope that's not the case, but if there's some reason why one of those guys aren't able to play, then we have somebody experienced who can step in and lead the team. And I think, you know, I'm going to absolutely, you know, fawn over Wuga Poplar. Like, the fact that this guy can do it all, and he's broken our backs on several occasions in his career at Miami, I would love to see him at Duke if that ends up being the case. I think he'd be a guy who could come in, know his role, and also, again, be a guy who can come off the bench, be a guy who can play considerable minutes if you need him to, like if there's foul trouble. He's a guy that could do it all and really could be a piece for us. But I think some of the other names that you mentioned is Kaderi Richmond. When he was mentioned as a potential for Duke, I also looked at that as well. I looked at the toughness factor that he exhibits. A lot of talk about how tough that guy is. And when you add him to a Mason Gillis and a Malik Brown, toughness seems to be the theme of the offseason for Duke. So I think that would be a really good pickup as well. And even the guy from Colgate, right? I hadn't heard his name until you mentioned it just a second ago. But he is a guy that I think if he's the Patriot Player of the Year, one, he can play, but two, he's not going to be blinded by the lights of Cameron. That's something that nowadays in college basketball, you got guys who play against big time opponents in big time situations. Colgate has been to the NCAA tournament, so they know what it's like to play there and recently. And so I think he could come in and also, again, be a guy who could come off the bench and give steady minutes and provide what we need to. But also, we talk about the academics. That man's going to be a great when it comes to our APR.
Yeah, no question about that. Look, the thing I'll say really quickly about Wuga Poplar is it's worth noting that I believe, unless something changed, he has also entered his name in the NBA draft. And I think it is possible that he's sort of testing that process a little bit, seeing what's happening there before really getting into picking his portal destination. And it's worth noting, we're recording this, Donald, at a little after 1 o'clock, right around 1:30 on Tuesday. The portal doesn't close, and by close, I mean close to new entrants, until tomorrow, till Wednesday, May 1st. That is when the portal will officially no longer take any more players. And it is possible, you know, depending on when guys got their NIL payments and things like that, it's possible there could be, we could see a flurry of guys entering here at the last minute. And part of what Duke may be doing is, you know, let's see what the final names are. Let's see everybody before we figure out exactly who we're taking. A guy like a Malik Brown, a guy like a Mason Gillis, both such great fits that, you know, just right away immediately go, yes, absolutely. But maybe for this last spot, John Shire is like, I want to see what's available. I want to see everything out there before I figure out exactly what I'm going to do.
You know, the saying that a lot of people do when we talk about the greatest players that ever lived, they kind of, some people will kind of go, the greatest player that ever lived may not have been born yet, right? We talk about that from time to time. The greatest player for Duke out of the portal may not be in the portal yet. And I think that's what Duke is waiting to see, the final list of guys. And then from there, we may see a flurry of people coming in for visits, or at least names that you see on the internet that Duke is targeting or has Duke on their list. Because I think at a certain point, Duke knows what they're looking for. It seems like they want to go for a guy who can drive the lane, get to the basket, be tough, be physical, and provide backup minutes, but also, again, be in a position to start, as opposed to a guy who can just shoot. If they have the shooting part of their game as well, that's great. But it feels like they want a guy that has the ball in their hand, that's able to have the ball in their hands a little bit more than being an off-the-ball kind of shooter in the corner. So think about that when you see the final list of names after midnight tomorrow, and then you'll kind of see maybe some of those names pop up on Duke's lists.
Yeah, last thing I want to say about the portal very quickly is that we've begun to get some inklings, some hints of where some of the Duke guys, some of the former Dukies, are headed. And I don't – look, these guys were once part of our team, and we are not ignoring them. We're not forgetting about them. TJ Power is visiting BC, supposedly visiting BC this week, perhaps even today. And the folks at BC, Boston College, seem very, very confident. They are really excited about the potential of landing a guy like TJ Power. It's worth noting that BC is very close to his hometown. He grew up in Worcester, Mass. I think that's like 45 minutes or an hour or so from the BC campus. So it'd be very easy for him to potentially go there. But the possibility exists, of course, that we could be seeing TJ Power multiple times a year in the ACC if he moves over to BC. And then the word on Sean Stewart is that he's supposedly down to either Ohio State or Georgetown. There were pictures over the weekend of him posing in a Georgetown uniform, as guys are wont to do when they visit a campus. I'm not sure. Someone said it was a Photoshop picture, so maybe it wasn't real. But regardless, it looks like Sean Stewart is angling for schools like Ohio State or perhaps Georgetown. And, I will at least be very interested in tracking where these guys and where Jaden Shute and Jalen Blakes and such, where everyone else from Duke ends up. Wishing them well, no matter where it is, with the exception of when they play the Blue Devils.
And I'm also going to root for Sean Stewart to not go to Ohio State because I'm petty and I'm a hater. Go to Georgetown. Come to DC, man. I'll come. I go to a couple Georgetown games a year. I'll come watch you play in the Georgetown uniform. That would be honestly a really nice move for him, because I think Georgetown could use his help.
All right, so let's move on to another topic. We're not going to spend a lot of time on this. We've touched on it here and there, but the Basketball Africa League has wrapped up at least the latest stage of play over there. And Kaman Maluach, my man, my man was playing for the City Oilers. That's the team he was playing for at the BAL. Look, his team was not that good, but they were playing against old men. He was playing against guys in their mid to upper 20s, even early 30s, experienced players, most of whom played in the U.S. for Power 5 conference teams. One of the guys that he had a really big game against, I forget if we talked about it on this show or if I just talked about it with all my friends, but he had a huge game against a guy who was all Big 12 for Baylor, like a decade ago or so. These are really good professional basketball players that Kaman Maluach was playing against. And the numbers he put up were truly impressive. It was only six games, so it wasn't, a lot of time. But Kaman Maluach, I'm trying to find the exact. Okay, here are the exact numbers. I found it again. So he averaged 17.8 points per game, 13.5 rebounds per game, and almost three blocks per game. By the way, he took a number of three-pointers. He was – He averaged a little better than 3 3-point attempts per game, and he hit about 37-38% of those three-pointers that he took. I want to repeat the numbers again. Playing against professionals, guys who have been in college basketball in the past, he averaged basically 18-13-3. Come on. I mean, just absurd. By the way, he led his team in minutes played. He was on the floor for, you know, 35 or so minutes per game because he had to, because they, you know, they needed a guy of his quality. He's 17 playing against 28, 29, 30 year olds and putting up really big 13.5 rebounds per game. I mean, if you are not super excited about seeing this guy in a Duke uniform, then you're missing out on something. And Donald, I want to remind everyone, when Duke first started recruiting this guy, I said, before we landed him as a prospect, I said, if there is anyone who can possibly take away Cooper Flagg's spot as the number one prospect in the 2025 NBA draft, it will be Kamen Maluach. I'm not predicting that's what's going to happen, but if there's anyone who's going to do it, it is a 7'2", three-point shooting monster of a 17-year-old who has a chance to do it.
Jason, I have all the box scores from all the games here, and all his stats from all the six
games.
Give
me the best. Give me the best. What's your best game? I want to hear, what's the best game?
The answer is, I was just going to say, my best game is, I don't know, because he had a game where he had 29 points, 12 rebounds, and 2 blocks. He had 0 blocks in that game. And you're like, okay, that might be his worst game, because the next game he had 16 points, 19 rebounds, and 7 blocks. Then he had one that was 27 points, 16 rebounds, and 2 blocks. I think his worst game might have been the last one, where he had 11 points, 13 rebounds, and 1 block. Like, what are we doing here? But he also had a steal. He also had 2 assists. Like, what is this guy's problem? Why does he have to be so good? Like, this is great. Please do this all year next year. If he could do just a mic or just a half of this, man, he's going to be awesome.
By the way, it is worth noting that the 7 block shots he had set a record that was the most in the history of the Basketball Africa League. In a single game, he set a record. And it is worth noting, he had a double-double in every single game. Again, first game he missed it. 16 points and 8 rebounds. So in 5 of the 6 games that they played, he had a double-double. And the last thing to note is, if you watch these games, and I watched a fair percentage of them, at least highlights and stuff like that, you know, I'd watch like a quarter here and there. Didn't watch the entire game every time. But anyway, if you really watch some of these games, his team did not run many plays for him. Like, they were very perimeter oriented. They had some experienced guards who were trying to create their own shots. Frankly, in my opinion, shooting some really inefficient shots all game long. And I was just like, God, this is terrible to watch. But this was not his team like going to Kamen again and again and again. When he was scoring, you know, like you said, 29 points, 27 points, 16 points over and over again in these games, that was him really creating opportunities for himself, getting his own rebounds and putting them back. He had multiple games of like 5, 6, 7 offensive rebounds. And by the way, every offensive rebound with Kamen Maluach is like, boom, slam dunk. Dude grabs it, and then he's back up so quickly, and he's so close to the rim already at 7'2" with those arms that like the ball is thundering through the basket in a, you know, the blink of an eye. It's fun to watch. And the notion of what he's going to do in a slightly more structured situation at Duke with creators like the guys that Duke's going to have around him, with guys who are going to be willing to toss up lobs and stuff like that to him. They didn't lob to him hardly at all. What were these guys thinking? He should have been getting a lob like every third play. But anyway, I'm super excited about Kamen Maluach.
We've talked a little bit about his game and how it's like, especially on offense, that it's a raw talent that needs to be cultivated, and that we should be giving them the grace of giving him some time to get acclimated. Well, I got two things that might refute my own statement. First of all, on defense, his block shots, Jason, I know you saw some of these, but a lot of them, they weren't block shots where he's tipping it in the air and maybe catching it and going the other way. These are with authority and with violence. He had one that I'm sure would have made it to the middle of the second deck in Cameron. Now you're thinking that's not that tall, but that's still far away from the court. And he was underneath the basket and came weak side and decided to throw some dude's shot into like the 19th row of the gym that they were in, which is a big, big gym. So first of all, we're going to see a lot of that. Secondly, Jason, I saw a lot of him blocking and turning that into offense in the other end in the form of dunks. But like you said, it wasn't him getting offensive rebounds. There was a couple of dunks where he got the ball in transition in the middle of the lane and took off from maybe a step inside the free throw line and yammed it on somebody. He has a little bit of that mean streak in him as well. He has the authority. He has the tendency of getting the ball and going, oh, there's somebody in my way. Well, not only am I taller and bigger than him, I'm meaner than him. And I'm going to dunk through his hand if he decides to try and block it. And thankfully, nobody attempted because he had some violent dunks. So the great thing about it is, and he has a nice little touch. That's going to be what they're going to work on, right? When he finally gets to Durham after the Olympics, that touch around the lane where he's not going to be able to dunk every single possession. I think he's going to try, but I don't think he's going to be able to do all that. I think at the end though, when you talk about him around the rim finishing, we joked earlier a couple episodes ago that he's probably going to be a guy that's going to be an easy pick for best field goal percentage in the stats game next season. Ooh, yeah. Because again, for him, being at the rim is like being 8 feet away because he's so tall and long that if he stretches out, like he's 9'5" when he stands with his arms in the air. The rim is 10 feet, so he doesn't have to – he can straight kind of far out from the rim and still be within distance to yam it on somebody. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Well, look, wait. It's going to be him against Malik Brown. Malik Brown, like, had one of the highest field goal percentages in like, the NCAA last
right,
year.
Right, right.
The choice of who's going to have the highest field goal percentage on Duke next year is not going to be easy. And maybe dependent on how much Kaman Malawach goes outside to take three-pointers, because those will bring your field goal percentage down very quickly.
Because Malik Brown is not taking – him. He's going to take, like – a three, like the occasional three. He's not taking two or three a game, as you mentioned.
Look, the last thing on Kaman Malawach I want to mention before we get to a quick break is this. South Sudan, the country that he plays for, and he has been named, I believe he's been named to their official Olympic team. Actually, I'm not sure about that, but it's almost certain. It's pretty much considered a done deal that he's going to be part of the South Sudan Olympic team.
John Shire had mentioned that.
Yeah.
Oh, we will look forward to seeing him after the Olympics in Durham. So
right.
It's if he's not if not official yet, they know that he's going.
Right, which means he won't show up until August. I mean, it'll be pretty close to when school starts that we'll first have Kaman Malawach arrive on campus. And that could slow his development as a Duke teammate. Everyone else on the team, I imagine, is going to be there starting in late June, early July at the latest. And he may be a couple months after that. But I did want to mention this. South Sudan is scheduled to play an exhibition against Team USA on July 20th. I believe it's in London in the run-up to the Olympics. And I believe that South Sudan and the U.S. have been drawn into the same pool of play for pool play at the Olympics. We may get multiple chances to see Kaman Malawach playing against Joel Embiid and Bam Adebayo and Anthony Davis. Who are the bit, right? I think those are all the bigs on.
Yep, those are the bigs. Yeah.
It'll be really interesting to see what he learns from playing against guys like that. And of course, you know, in the Olympics and the other, you know, exhibitions and the such, it's entirely possible that we'll see him against, I don't know, Rudy Gobert, Nikola Jokic. I mean, all the great big men who are out there and be playing in the Olympics. It'll be when this guy comes over to the ACC after playing in the Basketball Africa League and playing in the Olympics, he's going to be like, oh, playing against ACC centers? That's nothing.
Yeah, I hope he's a sponge, especially against Joel Embiid, who has a similar track to him, right? Like, Joel Embiid didn't start playing basketball until I think he was like 14 or 15 years old in Cameroon, got discovered, ended up playing a year at Kansas before being one of the best players in the NBA. So if Kaman Malawach is on a similar trajectory as Joel Embiid, that sounds great to me.
All right, with that, we're going to take a quick break. On the other side, the fan experience in Cameron gets better, and $20 million. How does that sound for a payroll for a college basketball team? We'll talk all about it when we come back. Hey there, Duke fans. You know, warmer, sunnier days are calling. Fuel up for them with Factors, no prep, no mess meals. Meet your wellness goals in time for summer thanks to the menu of chef-created meals with options like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Factor's fresh, never-frozen meals are dietitian-approved and ready to eat in just 2 minutes.
So no matter how busy you are, you'll always have time to enjoy nutritious, great-tasting meals.
That's right, Jason. And Jason, I can tell you, I just got some meals. They're fantastic. And the great thing is, like you said, 2 minutes. Mindless work. Pop it in the microwave. Do what you need to do. And it's ready to eat. No more cooking. No more cleaning pots and pans. And also, there's a lot of choices with 35 different meals and more than 60 add-ons to choose from every week. So you'll always have new flavors to explore.
All right. So head to factormeals.com/DukeBB50. Use that code DukeBB50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month. That's code DukeBB50 at factormeals.com. Get 50% off your first box, 20% off your next month while your subscription is active. Enjoy Factor Meals from the Duke Basketball Roundup.
All right, we are back from the break, and Donald, I just want to really quickly touch on this. Duke has announced that we are getting a new scoreboard inside of Cameron. It appears to like have multiple panels, like it's almost like circular or something like that. There will be multiple levels to it, so that if you're down like courtside, you know, you won't have to crane your neck too high to look up and see it. It's going to have like really great resolution of the pixels and things. I think you'll be able to do some really nice stuff with replays and statistics, and it is high tech of the first order and looks really, really cool. You excited about this?
Oh, yeah. I think, you know, a lot of people, there's purists out there that want to see Cameron be Cameron in 1934 or 1946, whatever, have you, with no scoreboard and all that stuff. I am not one of those people. I love the mystique of Cameron. I love how small Cameron is. But some of the things I think can always change to be modernized and continue to draw people in, because it, as you know, Jason, it's harder to get people to go to games now with TVs being so great, right? Like if you're
wait, hold on. I'm stopping you right there. It's not hard to get people to go to Cameron.
No. I'm talking about the experience, right? Because let's put it this way, Jason, as a student, right? Being in Cameron was much better than watching it on TV. Trust, right? Like,
yeah.
The 12-inch color TV. Now they have like 97-inch flat screen TVs in their dorm rooms. And so for some of the angles, right, like some, and I know it's been a thing over the past few years where they said, hey, it's harder to get students to drop everything and come to a game. And we'd say, yes, you should really live this experience because you're going to regret it when you graduate and you can't get in because you have to pay $500, right? But I still think that overall, overall though, right, like, the basketball experience has continually improved because they want to combat the people who can watch it from the comfort of their couch. And I'm not saying that being on your couch is equal to being in Cameron. Absolutely not. But I'm saying there's still, just because Coke is number one doesn't mean they shouldn't stop spending money on staying number one. That's how Cameron gets better, right? But you have the corner displays that they're talking about doing, the LED boards along the court. It'll create a nice little experience. And like you said, Jason, I think for a lot of replays and a lot of things that they want to do, obviously more advertising as well, they'll have plenty of room for that. This Jumbotron is basically going to be similar to one that you see in an NBA arena. Not nearly as big because Cameron is not that tall, but at the same time is going to provide a lot of that fan experience opportunity for everyone that's in there. And again, I think some of the things that they were even talking about with having it in the banners, on the backs of the banners, kind of going around Cameron so that even if you're at the top of the rafters, you can kind of see what's going on. I think that, you know, again, they're thinking about some of those things for people to want to be able to come to Cameron and to have that experience as if they, you know, were in college. So I'm really looking forward to it, to seeing how it looks. And hopefully, Jason, it doesn't distort my head if they put me on TV.
Look, the bottom line to me is Cameron is the premier, the most significant ticket in all of college basketball. If you ask people, is there one arena you must go see, you must go experience a game before you die, Cameron is the top of the list. I know that the folks at Kentucky and Kansas and a couple other places may scream and howl in protest, but hey, folks,
they're wrong.
Reality is Cameron is number one. So I think if Cameron is going to be number one because of the atmosphere, because of the tradition, because of what the crazies bring, because of the quality of the product Duke puts on the floor, then we might as well have a super high quality experience for you, you know, in terms of the technology and everything else surrounding it. You don't lose any of the ambiance. You don't lose any of the tradition of Cameron by putting in a really cool state-of-the-art scoreboard. So 100% in favor of it. I think this is great.
And it helps with things like, you know, the player intros, right? Like, yeah. Because player intros, like Countdown the Craziness, they'll be able to do a lot more stuff with it, with all the floorboards and all that. They already do the thing where they put the LED like kind of lights on the court and kind of portrayed the image on of stuff onto the court, which I think is really cool. But Jason, this also helps, and using a segue, it helps with recruiting, right? Because people, I mean, the kids nowadays, like players nowadays, they can play in Cameron, right? Like they don't have to be at Duke to necessarily play in Cameron. So to lure them in, they can use that to their advantage. They can say, hey, imagine this experience every single night. You're thinking this isn't a modern gym. This is as modern as any gym in the country, if not more than most in the country, and yet still provides the history and the mystique of all the great, great athletes who have stepped foot in it before you. So they can use this to their advantage in a lot of different ways. And I think it can also not just hype up the fan experience, but also the recruiting experience and just the experience for those players, both the men's and the women's. And volleyball, fencing, they kind of had the images of like anything that can be in Cameron, right? From fencing to basketball will have that heightened experience.
All right, so our last topic, and Donald, you are going to take the lead on this one. There is talk, ESPN has reported, that some of the folks who are among the leaders in the college sports world are talking about reaching a settlement about a very important lawsuit that was filed that claims that for years the NCAA has robbed the players of what they rightfully should be getting in terms of payment for appearing on television. Essentially, that the schools, that the NCAA should have been paying players for their name, image, and likeness for decades. This is a lawsuit that was filed I forget the exact date, but it's seeking more than $4 billion in damages. And the NCAA is talking about A, settling the lawsuit, and B, establishing some kind of formula, some kind of way that they would pay for play, pay the players to play the sports going forward. This would be obviously a massive sea change in the way all the revenue sports, frankly, all the sports in general operate. Donald, I know you've looked at this a lot. You are a lawyer. You know contracts and all this other kind of stuff. Take it away, my friend.
Yeah, so let's start from the basics, right? We're talking about a case called House versus NCAA. And in it, Jason, you mentioned that the argument here by House, it's a class action. There's two different classes of plaintiffs. They are arguing that the NCAA is breaking federal law by placing restrictions on how athletes make money from name, image, and likeness. Now, when I say there's two separate classes, there's two different types of people who are suing as part of this lawsuit. There are the former college athletes who, prior to 2021, when NIL became legal in the NCAA, they are athletes who are saying, hey, the NCAA owes me money because I could have earned so much money when I was in college, but they wouldn't let me. So there's that set side of people. There's also the current college athletes who are saying that any restrictions that the NCAA has on what type of NIL deals they can sign is also illegal. Now, Jason, this is what we call an antitrust lawsuit. Now, the reason why you mentioned that $4 billion number is actually $1 billion is what they're seeking. That's what they're saying is what they could, you know, the collective action could have earned at minimum if they had allowed NIL all along. But in an antitrust verdict, if they rule in favor of the plaintiffs, the verdict allows for three times the compensatory damages as punitive. So an additional $3 billion for a total of around $4 billion. And Jason, that's not the only one that is involved here. There's another case called Carter v. NCAA. That case argues that the NCAA should not be able to keep the individual universities from paying players directly for their performance. So that is a separate one that is not being argued in this $4 billion total lawsuit that they have, but it is important for this reason. The NCAA sees this number, Jason, up to $4 billion like you did, and they go, yo, we need to settle. We need to figure this out. We can't be paying $4 billion or more to settle just one lawsuit when it comes to NIL. So now they are talking about trying to get a settlement deal in place. And the money would trickle down to the individual schools to, in essence, hopefully pay out to the players in a form of back pay and NIL. Now, they're saying that this deal isn't imminent and they're still talking through some of the specifics. But what generally has been talked about is something where each school would be able to opt in to share revenue up to an annual number of $20 million. They can choose to share less, but they can't go more than $20 million initially. What is uncertain is how this would be impacted. Do the schools directly deal with the athletes? We don't know. Would Title IX be impacted in some way by this? We don't know. I think the other thing, Jason, that you need to understand is that the NCAA is doing this not necessarily because they're like, oh, out of the goodness of their heart, they're saying, hey, this is something that we need to do and it's right. They want to stop all these other lawsuits that are coming about. There's really four lawsuits right now that are antitrust lawsuits against the NCAA in the name of area of name, image, or likeness that's going on right now. They are hoping that by settling the very first case, they can then preclude all the other ones from going forward and they can only pay X billion of dollars towards this lawsuit. So this is just one of the consequences of the NCAA not dealing with this 7 to 10 years ago in a proactive way. Now they have to be reactive. And Jason, if you're going to stop these other lawsuits from going ahead, you're going to have to pay a little bit more to make them go away, right? So when they're talking about, hey, maybe we just get away with $4 billion to settle all this, it might be more than that. But the question would still remain, how does the NCAA make this a reality? We talked about, was this like 6 months ago, about how they wanted to create like a subdivision of divisions of college sports where students in schools would basically enter into their own contracts and they could pay each other and it'd be that, you know, kind of an FCS or whatever, FDS, whatever you want to call it.
Right.
Whereas the college football playoff would kind of separate from itself and then you could just do whatever you want there, right? But the idea is this, the NCAA is in a lot of trouble because they have all these lawsuits going at each other and they're seeing the lay of the land change and they're seeing how they could have messed up by not being proactive a decade ago. So that's where these lawsuits are. There's no imminent deal, but they are starting to talk about how they could settle this thing and make it where A, the lawsuits go away, but also again, set up a structure where NIL could be paid directly from colleges to the student athletes.
Yeah, and there have been figures that have been tossed around. And I don't know that, you know, these are going to be final or anything like that. But ESPN says they are talking about something in the range of $15 to $20 million. It would be sort of the current payroll for athletes at a school. My bet is most of that would go to football players, and then you'd have men's basketball players, and then maybe some women's basketball players. Not a lot of other sports are going to get any payment. And if you're only talking about $15 to $20 million, that may seem like a lot of money. But, you know, when you're talking about 22 starters and plus, you know, some specialists on a football team, and you're talking about, you know, 8 significant players or so on every basketball team, $20 million starts to disappear fairly quickly. So, it'll be interesting to see how all of this stuff ends up happening. There's little question that something has to change. The NCAA has stuck its head in the sand for so long, despite all of us. Look, it's not like you and I were experts beyond what other people were saying. Everyone has been saying for a long, long time, something had to happen. NCAA just chose to like ignore it and kick the can down the road. And now suddenly the can is looking like it has billions of dollars that, you know, are needing to be paid by the NCAA.
And the NCAA is still in reactionary mode because they're still waiting. They've all along said, hey, Congress should step in to do something. Congress is coming in and be like, yo, we're trying to fix streets and you know, healthcare and all this stuff. And you're worried about us coming in to fix the NCAA. That's your job. So it's been a back and forth. And still the NCAA, even while talking about settling these lawsuits, or still going to Congress and saying, hey, you should do something about NIL. And Congress is saying, we have bigger fish to fry. So this is still a reactionary period. And even with this $20 million, as you said, that $20 million sounds like a big number, but that's not a lot of slices of pie to go around. And you just talked about two sports, right? There's 85 scholarships on a football team. 85. You just take that number and you're not even covering scholarships for some of these guys. When you're talking about basketball, $20 million, a lot of these guys, like Duke, we don't know what some of these guys are making, but if people are making close to $1 million, you know, you're almost running out before you get to the football team. So there's a lot that still needs to be hammered out. And the thing about NIL, and actually Terrell Smith, who's the NIL strategy director for Duke, he talked about this at reunion a couple weeks ago. He said, and Nita King said this, the ever-changing landscape is like daily to weekly. It's not monthly to yearly. And so she said, Nina King said, hey, take what I say today with a grain of salt, because next week it could be very different, because things could open up or things could shut down. So the NCAA really has their work cut out for them because they've waited so long. And because the landscape keeps changing like the wind, I think this is the start of something. But if they don't settle this lawsuit, $4 billion may not be enough. That's the problem for the NCAA. This could bankrupt the NCAA, thinking about how much money is already in NIL and how much more would need to be pumped in for it to be equitable for everybody.
All right. With that, I mean, you and I can keep on talking about this. We could keep
all day
guessing and postulating and trying to figure things out. Frankly, no one knows where, even the NCAA doesn't know where all this is headed. It is it's the wild, wild west, and the wild, wild west is lawless for a reason. In any event, that's going to wrap it up here for us on the latest edition of DBR Bites, latest edition of the Duke Basketball Roundup. He is Donald. I am Jason. We ask you, as always, send us those emails, dbrpodcast@gmail.com. By the way, a little bit of a tease. We're going to be coming back at you in just a couple days. If you have not yet seen the documentary on the Blue Devil mascot, the history of the Duke Blue Devil, take a chance, hit that Google thing, hit YouTube, check it out. It's there for you to watch it. We're going to be talking to the man behind the Blue Devil documentary coming up very soon on the DBR podcast. Until then, here's the Duke band playing us out and taking us home. Yeah,